Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. December 19, 2021. Can the miracle of Hanukkah be repeated? Question. It is said that a miracle happened on Hanukkah. The oil, which should have been enough for only one day, burnt for 8 days. Do you think this could really happen in the material world? Answer. There are many opportunities for such incidents and events in our world. This all depends on how we treat them. Of course, what happened on Hanukkah was a miracle from an earthly point of view. Comment, but no one can repeat it. My response, of course. There are no such conditions. But if there were, then it could be repeated. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, November 30, 2021. Michael Leitman, on the Times of Israel, Jewish Unity Against Extinction. I can see very strong anti-Semitism and anti-Israel sentiment, and it's beginning to be okay, said Professor Israel Orman, 2005 Nobel laureate in economics, in a recent interview with local newspaper Israel Hayom. I share his concern and great sorrow. It is spreading within streams that are considered the bon ton of global society. We have the diagnosis, but it is extremely urgent to begin intensive treatment to cure Jew hatred before it is too late. The cure is in our hands and in the hands of no one else. We just need to recognize it. There has always been anti-Semitism of the extreme right in the world. But the extreme right doesn't lead the world and doesn't set the tone. Those who really have influence are the progressives and the moderate left in America and Europe, Orman added. That's an accurate reflection, but whether the hate comes from the right or the left, it's still hate, it's still dangerous. Therefore, we should look at its source and not stop to ask why the Jews and the State of Israel are being attacked so violently. We need to examine how to neutralize all kinds of hatred against us, and achieve a good life. Already 14 years ago, in September 2007, when I met with Professor Orman at a round table discussion, he pointed out that relations in Israeli society have changed for the worse, as people only care about their small private slit. Something has been lost here, and I think that is the reason for all the difficult problems that are overtaking us, including in the area of security, he told me at the time. In my opinion, we will not be able to exist here much longer on the basis of post-Zionist ideals, which in reality are not ideals, but lacking ideals. First, because we are still surrounded by enemies, and second, because today there are elements within the state that do not want the State of Israel to continue to exist as a Jewish state. Then there may or may not be physical destruction, but if we continue on the current path, we will lose our identity completely. And I find that very unfortunate and disturbing, he said. In fact, the situation has only worsened because of the increased selfishness of Israel's society, which has permeated into many facets of our daily life. In the world, too, the same ego that grew from generation to generation and propelled humanity to development and prosperity in all spheres reached its peak at the end of the 20th century, until all the boundaries we knew in the past were broken. And so today we all find that we are in a small global village, and yet simultaneously there is vociferous hatred between people. This hostility threatens the very existence of humanity and especially the people of Israel. The selfishness that has erupted in Israel over the last 60 years has led to a drastic alienation between us. The value of love your neighbor as yourself that bound us together as a people before the destruction of the temple has completely disappeared. We have sunk to an unprecedented low, and as Professor Orman said, this poses an existential threat to us. If the alienation between us continues, we will completely lose our identity as a people and as a society. And if we lose ourselves and disappear as a people, we cease to provide the world with its spiritual oxygen, we cease to function as a light unto the nations. Consequentially, instead of helping humanity, we hinder it. In response, humanity rises up and shows intense hatred for us, from all sides of the political spectrum, blaming us for all the evil in the world. In order to contain the growing threat of anti-Semitism and preserve the existence of our people and our state, we must return to the principle of love your neighbor as yourself. That is the only solution. The cure for hate is love. Therefore, we must first agree that the realization of the value of love between us is the foundation and basis for our existence as a people. Without this love, we do not have the right to be called one people. We are just a collection of people living on a common piece of land with nothing to bind us. In our lives, everything depends on education, on changing human attitudes, on rising above our differences and strengthening the mutual guarantee and consideration between us. It will lead us back to fulfilling our role as a Jewish nation, which Rav Kook clearly stated, namely, to unite the whole world in one family. Only when we begin to internalize the importance and value of loving others can we save our people, our country and the entire world. Medium published my new article Why People Remember Love Only on Their Deathbed. I was told that before he died, Apple co-founder and CEO Steve Jobs wrote a letter where he reflected on life. According to the letter, he wrote, "Treasure love for your family, love for your spouse, love for your friends. God gave us the senses to let us feel the love in everyone's heart, not the illusions brought about by wealth. The wealth I have won in my life, I cannot bring with me. What I can bring is only the memories precipitated by love. That's the true riches that will follow you, accompany you, giving you strength and light to go on. Indeed, before a person dies, he begins to feel something of the truth. The approaching death makes him give up his ego and enables him to see the truth. There is a boundary between caring for oneself and emerging into an entirely different realm where there is overflowing love. The ego prevents us from finding it because it is always looking inward, at what I have and what I can gain, rather than at what is really out there. Therefore, when it steps aside, we realize what we have been missing all our lives, a world full of love that exists all around us. The ego dies just before the person dies. Freed from its shackles, we can now realize that we have not really loved before and do not know what true love is. It is a sad moment of reckoning when we realize that all our lives we have thought only of ourselves. There are those who advise people on their deathbed, and I have witnessed it myself, that in that state we should drink, smoke, enjoy ourselves and take as much as we can from life while we still can. This approach may be honest, but I do not think it brings happiness. We must remember that the soul never stops evolving, it continues to develop even after a person's physical demise. Therefore, realizing the true meaning of love, that love is not about feeling my own existence, but that I exist for the sake of others and that satisfying them makes me happy, that realization is priceless and eternal. Medium published my new article Boycotting Beijing 2022 Games Proves We've Gone Backwards. The US, Canada, Australia, the UK, and other countries have announced that they will diplomatically boycott the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing over China's alleged abuse of human rights. In the past, the world viewed mixing sports and politics in a very negative light. This is no longer the case. The odium among countries has intensified to the point where any means of showing disapproval is legitimate. The ancient Greeks had what was known as the Olympic truce, when all fighting ceased before and during the Olympic Games to ensure that the host city-state, Elis, was not attacked and athletes and spectators could travel safely to the Games and return peacefully to their respective countries. So much has changed since the days of ancient Greece. People had ideals then, we have none. We often think of people in antiquity as barbaric and of ourselves as civilized. In many ways we are the barbarians, and the Olympics are an example of that. We have gone backwards. We can no longer unite around anything. The selfish urge for self-assertion makes us, impulsively and staunchly oppose any view of another person simply because it is the view of another person and I want my view to dominate, not anyone else's. Then again, the ego keeps growing, and we are growing constantly more hateful of each other, so it is better if the ego demonstrates its nature. At least now we can see who we are and not fantasize that we are somehow more humane or civilized than our ancestors, but quite the contrary. Since recognizing a flaw is inevitably the starting point for correcting it, now that we have come to it, we can start building ourselves better. If we are still not sure who we are, we should consider the amount of drugs and other illegal and unfair advantages that countries encourage, and sometimes force their athletes to use and employ in order to get on the Olympic podium. It is a war, and in a war it does not matter how you won as long as you won. If it was sports, all that would matter was how you played and not how you won or if you won at all. In Greece, they played for sport. We play to win. Competition should bring out the best in us, make us, improve ourselves. It should not make us, better than others, but better than our former selves. The fact that we compete to create an incentive to improve ourselves is welcome because it makes us, push our limits. However, when we compete for the sake of winning, we are not focusing on improving ourselves, but mainly on outperforming others. In this case, it makes no difference whether you achieved your goal by improving yourself or by affecting others. Therefore, we have no concern about hurting others. On the contrary, it is easier and more enjoyable to hurt others than to improve yourself. In the current form of the Olympics, they have no use other than to show us how far we have strayed from their original intent. The real gold medal should go to those who improve others. That is the true spirit of sportsmanship. The way truth is revealed. Question: why is pursuing the truth, even if it is wrong, restricted by censorship? Basically, the whole world is censored. Answer: the whole world is a totally egoistic field only engaged in planting weeds at the level of still, vegetative, animate, and human, trying to create something out of them to conquer the world, win, defeat, and break it. It is natural. Our whole world is built on a completely different nature. If some company creates a website where people would advocate an ideologically correct direction of human development, then, of course, they will have to come to Kabbalah. Question: could there be disputes and differing opinions? Answer: of course. There can be disputes in revealing the truth. But these are disputes not about who is right and who is wrong but what the truth is. The main thing is to have the correct ideology. It does not matter to me who is right or wrong. We need to find out the law of nature that is outside of you and outside of me. We scrutinize it, and we strive for it together. Question: we know that Kabbalists of the past always had different opinions. Were these disputes aimed to identify a higher level? Answer: of course. They greatly encouraged the difference and variety of opinions. This is how truth is revealed. As it is said, truth is born in a dispute. But not in disputes that are currently taking place in parliaments of different countries. From CAB TV's Kabbalah Express, December 6, 2021. A teacher is just below God. Question: who is today's teacher? Answer: a person who teaches our children to read and write. Question: is this what should be expected of a teacher to teach today? Answer: I don't see any teacher teaching anything else. Question: what would you like a teacher to teach? Answer: it should be a different question. If I want a teacher to teach something else, society has to be different and parents have to be different. They should know what children lack and need to learn in life, and so, parents should also educate them. A teacher is a public representative who should educate the public, the new generation, correctly. Question: what should a teacher's salary be? Answer: it should be the highest possible. No other profession is more important than teaching. Question: and compared to a doctor? Answer: a doctor is less. A doctor cares for the body while a teacher helps students develop their soul. Question: how should parents relate to teachers? Answer: with respect. A teacher is just below God because he teaches us how to relate to God. A teacher is a guide, he is the one who opens and teaches about the correct attitude to society, to life and death, to everything. A teacher is actually the representative of the upper force here in this world. From CAB TV's Introspect, Current Affairs in the Light of Kabbalah, December 6, 2021. We are holding the key to happiness. The UN has issued another statement condemning Israel. However, we must understand that the main reason for the hatred of Jews is the fact that we are not fulfilling our purpose in the world, which is to explain to all nations how to achieve good connection and peace. Otherwise, the world will slide further down its downward spiral. The growth of antisemitism comes from the general law of development of humanity. If humanity has to develop and we do not sweeten this development through our correct behavior, then we cause hatred toward us. This is a law of nature. Therefore, antisemitism will grow, and there is only one solution, which was described in the wisdom of Kabbalah and in the Torah thousands of years ago. We will not be able to escape from our mission. We have nowhere to hide. There is no place on earth where we would be able to exist if we do not establish correct relationships. Then it will influence all the nations of the world and they will look at us differently. Everything depends on the good and correct connection between Jews, because the people of Israel were assembled from representatives of all the nations of the world. Only in this form can we oblige all nations to good association and connection. And then peace and tranquility will come to the entire world. We are holding the key to happiness for the entire world. I cannot express how painful it is for me to see how people suffer and do not find solutions because they do not understand in what form nature operates and what interconnections exist in it. Yet, there is a solution. According to what the wisdom of Kabbalah and the Torah say, nothing is required except for one thing: to bring the people of Israel to unity, and we will thus cause all the nations of the world to unite. Unfortunately, it is easier for Jews to unite with their enemies and haters than with each other. After all, uniting with each other belongs to correction, and uniting with haters belongs to corruption. Our stony heart is drawn to corruption. While we do not do that, nature will be beating us. 2 days ago, more than 100 people died as a result of a tornado in the U.S., state of Kentucky. In a few seconds, the city turned into ruins, an apocalyptic scene. And nature is already preparing more tornadoes. It is possible to stop all natural disasters by uniting people. Let's try. Maybe it will help right now. The force of unity of people is more powerful than any tornado, any natural disaster. It is even stronger than the upper force. Any disaster, a hurricane, a financial crisis, a viral epidemic, all these are blows of nature in response to the lack of unity between people. The connection between people is the most internal force in the world, and if it is not sufficient, then nature reacts with blows. Yet, people cannot unite because there is a group in humanity called Jews. This group is mandated to come to unity first and thus awaken the feeling in all the nations of the world that unity is the cure for all troubles. Therefore, the nations of the world need to turn to the Jews and demand that they start working on their unification. This is what the United Nations is for. Instead of condemning the state of Israel, let them protest against the people of Israel all over the world for not working on unification in order to prevent natural disasters in all corners of the world in any form. It does not matter in which country a Jew lives, in Russia, in America, or in Israel, whether he is rich or poor, any Jew who does not work on unification causes disasters in the world. Therefore, time is running out. We need to unite right now. Only if we show the entire world an example of unity, will we fulfill our purpose. From CapTV's Conversation with Journalists, December 12, 2021. Human nature. Everything is for my sake. There are only two forces in the world, the property of receiving and the property of bestowal. The property of receiving is found on all levels of nature, inanimate, vegetative, animate, and human. We see its manifestations. We do not see the true property of bestowal at all, as if it does not exist. This is what manifests itself as the upper force, the power of the Creator, which animates everything and controls everything, but we do not feel it. We see only egoistic forces, each of which is aimed in some direction for its own benefit. This is the nature of our world. Its inner strength, the force of the Creator, energizes all matter. This is not a force that we can talk about, catch, or measure. Spiritual actions differ from material ones in that they are not carried out for the benefit of the person who produces them. Therefore, if a person does something, it must be done for himself. If he is told, "Do it, but not for your own benefit," he will not be able to fulfill it. Even if he is put in a certain framework and he does something in order not to be punished, it will still benefit himself. Other actions are not inherent in us, because we do not have the properties corresponding to them, the properties of bestowal, disinterested love, something that does not bring any benefit to the person who produces them. That is, in addition to egoistic actions where a person clearly understands that he performs them for himself only, there are also spiritual, altruistic actions that he does not do for himself, are not directed at him, and do not return to him. We cannot perform such actions, but we can gradually master this nature with the help of certain skills by attracting a higher altruistic force on ourselves, which, acting on us, gives us the opportunity to act in this way too, not for ourselves. From CapTV's Spiritual States, December 7, 2021. How will the state of Israel be accepted in the world? Question: what should Israel do to be accepted in the world? Answer: it should be a spiritual state. We need to educate the nation to be a spiritual nation, to follow the rule of love thy friend as thyself. Question: who wants to do this in the first place? Answer: the question is how much pressure will be put on us, until we want to. Question: is there another solution? Answer: to explain to the whole world that we need to build a special state here that will be a model for all of humanity. The moment we insist on that, explain it, and build ourselves in correct relationship between us, as they helped everyone his friend, we will be accepted in everyone's eyes and will be able to build one nation and one state. From CapTV's Conversation with Journalists, November 28, 2021. New Life 1327. Building Trust in a Relationship.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitzo Mazoz. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about trust in a relationship. We'd like to better understand how can we take our relationship to a place where we can have better trust in our spouse, to feel that the person next to me is here for me, that we can build a life together. Be with us, Nitzo, please. Yeah, so trust relations or a trust relationship is a kind of a very basic component that's important in any relationship in life, actually. But especially today, we'd like to focus on trust relationships within a relationship between two spouses. which is the basis on which love, connection, and all those good things that we want to build in our relationship can be based on. There's this preliminary condition that is actually related to trust, my ability to trust the other side, to believe that they'll be there for me regardless of what happens, for better or for worse, and to believe that we're doing this together. And yeah, maybe there will be different processes and crises on the way, but still, we will be there and we will be able to rely on one another. So maybe the first question, because like we said, trust is something that we want to have in any relationship still. What's so special about our need to feel and build trust relations in a relationship? Without that, I don't think that it's possible to live over time. And today we live together for many years. And also our way of living. We don't live like we used to, where the husband went out to work for the entire day. Today many people work from home.
Coronavirus.
Whether it's because of the coronavirus or so we stay home. We need to build very stable, good, safe, trustworthy relations so that everyone will feel that they can only add to it and more and more. And this is something that, it's going kind of hard. It's difficult. We live in a society that's not made for it. You know, with the media that all the time only tells us about different forms in which relationships or couples are being destroyed, broken up. It's a problem. It's real artistry to build trust and good relations in a family between spouses. That if we feel a need for it, then it's already after many years of being together and being broken and making mistakes. Unfortunately, that's how it is. We're not, first of all, we're not taught. No one teaches us how to do it right. Also, we see it in the family, we see it between parents. We're not getting the proper guidance. I'd say even in kindergarten, but at least at school and on. And there's no such body in the country, in society, that takes care of it, that works with it, that sees that the well-being, the health of society depends on trust between spouses. We're talking about dependence on the one hand and trust on the other. So, for the sake of comparison, if we look at a relationship between a child and the parents and the child, so first of all, there's an automatic relationship of dependence, and then from that, also some kind of trust is formed. In a relationship, it's the other way around. First of all, we actually need to give trust, and then we start building the mutual dependence. And there's something very unique in a relationship, as opposed to other relations, maybe, that there's mutual dependence here all the time that influences our mutual trust that we grow between us. If I could get some key principles, how to correctly build trust in a relationship. The basis is that we are dependent, interdependent, and one side can't be well off without the other side being well off as well. And this mutual dependence needs to be very important. That it's something that you can't divide into two, but you're always connected into one. And this is something that you need to work on all the time, ceaselessly. It's a beautiful principle for both of us to feel good, because it always makes sure that we make sure that the other side feels good too. If I care for the other, for the spouse, then I'll be well off too. So that's a principle. Are there any other principles? That this is something that we need to work on all the time. Like my teacher said, that relations in a family are like an animal that you need to feed all the time. So what do you feed it with in order to create trust? To all the time show that I am concerned I care for my spouse, that I care for her, I owe her, and I feel dependent on her. It's actually to show the dependence. There's dependence between us, and I show it. I show my need for the other, for my spouse. Right. I want to present a story of a certain couple that wrote us for this show. In general, the relations between us they're living together for several years already, they have children, and lately, the man feels that the woman is lying to him in different small things. Lies here, lies there, again, again, again. And he starts feeling that he can no longer trust her. He feels that, just as an example, you know, they talk in the middle of the day, how are you, what are you doing, I'm here, I'm there. He's not really sure that she is where she says, what are you doing today, etc., etc., things that have to do with the family budget. He starts gradually feeling, you know, he's filling his sack with a feeling. It's not big things, it's little things, that if she says something, he's not sure that it's the truth. And as a result, his trust in her is really undermined as his wife, as the mother of his children, as a spouse that, you know, he thought she'd support him throughout difficult times. Little lies. He understands that it comes from a certain fear, maybe because if she'll tell him exactly what she's doing, how much did it cost, this, that, maybe he won't accept her as is. There's a kind of entanglement here that's sitting on the feeling of little lies. When this is the situation, you previously said a key sentence, we need all lifelong build the good relations and trust, and this can only come after many years of making mistakes, being broken, this and that. Let's take this path. How from this state where there are little lies between them do they start overcoming this crisis? First of all, talk about it openly. Not about the past, because maybe they're still not ready to open the past. So to talk about what? About the present and future. The husband that feels that she lies to him, that she's lying to him time and time again. Suppose that's me. What do I tell her? You sit her down, you sit together. No one's disturbing you, you have time, and you talk to her. She said that you want to build such relations that it will always be pleasant for you together. You want to invest in her your entire life, and you feel good doing it. And for you, it gives you contentment. It does you good when you think good things about her, and that you can trust her, and that you hope that this is how she will treat you too. And from this day on, it doesn't matter what happened yesterday. Yesterday, maybe we were kids. We don't understand it exactly, but today, let's understand that in our good and open attitude toward each other, when we come with an open heart, we build a state in the family where we enjoy that we have a family framework and that we're continuing together. I was listening to you, and at no point did I hear you expressing your fear of not trusting me or something. No, I don't want to think about that at all. So you said exactly how you would like things to be and not what you feel. This is how I want to start treating her, and let's hope that she will answer me with the same attitude. But what do you do with the feeling that you already don't trust her? I don't want to think about it. We put a stop, and we start anew. We draw a line, and from there on, I don't want to get into the dirty laundry. So, very consciously, you see things very consciously. It's not that you suppress them, but you prefer to talk about how you'd like for things to be. Right, that's called love covers all crimes. And the other side, maybe they won't even understand why you're saying it. From this day and on, that's how I'd like to feel. That I'm devoted to her, and I think about her, and I care for her, and I hope that I too, in return, will get the same attitude. And this way, mutually, that's how we'll live. But you're all the time talking about how you would like for things to be. Yeah, I'm actually serving her my attitude from this day on. And maybe it wasn't so, but now I want for it to be more obvious. You're also giving me a good mutual picture. Right. But what is it based on? Because what's my problem? I don't want to think about it. From this day and on, I want to all the time think about good things, that we are drawn to each other at heart. But I don't really believe in her. I don't think about it. I feel it. I don't need to think about it. I don't want to feel it. I want to open a clean slate. So what do you do about this feeling? She lied, suppose, 8 times lately. Doesn't matter how many times. I want to open a clean slate. So tell me what to do. How do you open a clean slate? If you really want to determine new good relations, you have no choice. So it's a process that I need to do myself before I come to her? Right. But by no means to go and criticize how things were. So let's take it step by step. First of all, I need to scrutinize with myself if I want to break things up or continue or what. What's the scrutiny? Of course. I'm talking about a couple that have children, a family. Yeah, they do. And therefore, they need to think how from now on they heal the family. But she's the problem. That's what you think. Maybe she thinks the same about you too. But I'm saying that we needn't look back. This is my wife. She brought me to a state where I don't believe her. Fine. What happened happened, but it broke my heart, really. I can't believe my wife. You could put the pieces back together. So teach me how to do that. You said it's artistry. Teach me. You start treating each other anew. Anew.
Hello.
Many times I hear people saying to glue things together. The feeling is that when something's broken, you can't glue it anymore. I hear it many times when people tell it, it's broken, that's it. I don't see how can we glue it. It's because they didn't get the proper guidance, education, etc. And, you know, foolishness. So the correct gluing begins with, first of all, with my intention at any state, regardless of what happens, to keep the connection. First of all, strengthening the connection, right? And then, previously we talked about doing it open-heartedly. Usually we think that to speak open-heartedly is to reveal how things were, so to put it on the table. But you're saying no. No, it only awakens more and more place for suspicion, etc. So what do you mean by speaking open-heartedly? From this point on, I want to talk, I want to speak to her with an open heart, and let's hope that it will come from her side too. But suppose, okay, you yourselves, you can treat her favorably, but that each of us, every moment, sends signs of consideration, love, and connection to the other. I have a few questions from viewers. First question, how do what I do in relation to her will change reality? Because I'm playing, well, I'm acting out as if everything's fine. I know she lied. Will it change the situation, my acting? The way you act toward her now, that you act it out, that you play, it will become reality. What will make it real? Because you want for it to be that way, and this is how you play it out. Another question. There are people that say that if a person has the inclination to lie little lies, he'll come back to it in the future. Now, we need to reach a state where we don't lie whatsoever to each other. So much so that if I've received some food from her and I don't like it, I have to gently tell her, but to tell her that it's not exactly satisfying. Why is that important? Because I accustom myself not to lie to her. Many people lie these little lies because they think that they don't want to hurt the other side. No. This is what we agree upon, that we speak the truth to each other gently, but we speak the truth because from that we learn how to reach good. Is it an important principle to speak the truth? You bet, because without that you don't correct the deeds, the states, the relations. I'll give you an example. My wife, she makes me Yemenian soup. And she's an Ashkenazian. Right. Now, I feel that she's trying, really. She's finding out how to make the ingredients. And she adds a spoon of sugar or something. No, she does everything by the book. She gives it to me. I really feel her love in that plate. Now, you tell me to tell the truth, even if it's not. How's the soup, she asks me. So tell her, my mother's grandma's soup was better and was tastier, and I think that it's because of this and that, and she'll do it next time. Maybe were I to tell her that the soup's great. No, that's not enough, because you also need to enjoy her doing it and give her the opportunity to improve. So what does exactly mutual trust, what is it based on? That we want to do good to each other. Another question. You see, a question from a viewer. But aren't there things that it's better not to tell her spouse? For example, about previous relationships that we had. You don't talk about that. You don't talk about the past. We already talked about this. We don't talk about what happened up until now. Why, actually, what does this principle say? Life goes on. We don't want to look back. Okay, another question. I have many questions. This is a very interesting topic. You're actually saying that I need to behave toward her the way I would like for her to behave toward me, and then she'll be infected by it. Yeah, I'm giving her an example. Is it a law of nature? How does it work? I give her an example of how I treat her, and I expect her to treat me the same way. Why should she take this example? Because it's good. I'm not demanding anything. By my example, I really want to change her, that she will treat me the same way too. I see that you're taking a lot upon yourself, upon your desire. I want for there to be trust between us. I want to have a good relationship. I want for us to tell the truth. And if I do it all the time, all day long, day in, day out, then I am sure that this way I will awaken her too. What gives you the certainty? That's my question. It's a law of nature. Can you explain this law? A law of nature that if I make concessions and I do good, nice deeds for someone, eventually I oblige them to treat me the same way too. Life is such that many times we say these nice things and as if open a clean slate, and after some time, again, crisis, it's because you are holding a grudge in your heart. You're like holding a knife behind your back. That's the problem. Oh, what is that knife or stone that you nonetheless want to do what you think is good for you and maybe not good for her or for him? We need to arrange things in such a way that only when things are good for my spouse, then things are good for me too. I need to become used to, I have to become used to enjoying her feeling good. So trust is a part of our ability to create trust in our relationship. We really want to feel trust. How is the fact that I make sure that he'll feel good builds trust in me? By that, I build the other side. I have no other way to do it. By my ongoing good example in each and every possible detail, this is how I teach the other side to treat me. What's the difference between couples where one annuls himself toward the other and it brings to states of exploitation, and why doesn't it work there? It's a sign that someone's not doing it, that he's not doing it correctly. I have to show the other side that I'm conceding, that I'm doing it for them due to my love toward them. Will it not allow her to take advantage of me? No, if I do it this way, then no, because I see that I'm doing it not out of trust or something, but that I relate to her that way, because I think that this way we are supposed to exist. There are many people nowadays that are very egoistic. Everyone is. I'm talking about two egoists. But that have some common sense and experience that see that otherwise they can't get along. I'm not talking about some naive couple, young couple that fell off a cloud. Question. So we don't need mutuality in this? Yes, by your attitude, you force her to mutuality. Is it possible to get clear guidance? What should we talk to our spouse about and what shouldn't we? Only about the good things that can strengthen our connection. Tell her 10 times a day that you love her. Usually when something in the trust is undermined, usually it's the one side that caused a crisis in our trust relations and the other side is offended. Who's supposed to start in order to restore and rebuild? Doesn't matter who. That's not good. If someone is in debt here, but everyone wants to correct things if there's a kind of rift between them. Suppose I was hurt by my spouse. Should I tell him or shouldn't I tell him that I was hurt by him? Yes, you can say that. Why not? And we'll learn from it that they won't do it next time. And it could be that they'll explain it to me and I'll see that
עוד שאלה, אמרת קודם משפט יפה על לעזוב את האבן או את הסכין שיש לי מאחורי הגב. למה הכוונה? האם אתה מתכוון לזה שאני צריכה לשחרר מצידי באמת את כל
השאלה? Does it mean that I have to let go of all the past, to let go of everything, throw it into the ocean, and every moment to start anew? We're approaching the end, and I'd like to go back to what you said in the beginning. You said that it's real artistry to build trust and good relations, and it could come after many years of mistakes, etc., etc. What is this art?
על שני דברים, זה שאנחנו אגואיסטים ועברנו בכל מיני התקטטויות משהו בחיים,
went through different things in life, and that from this moment on we want to build good and proper relations and enjoy life.
וזה דווקא טוב.
And it's actually good even for those that are in
שכבר יש להם ניסיון ו
And those that have experience already and they want to improve things. How do you define trust between couples? Trust is that I give an example of relating to the other with an open heart, and what comes from the other I accept from the start as something good. I have lots of trust in people, I see. No, I don't. Completely not, but no choice. We need to know how to feed our egoistic animal that it will agree to connect with the spouse, and that this is how we will live. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Good luck to you. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
Human, striving to become like the Creator. Question. What is an animal inhuman and human inhuman according to Kabbalah? Is human inhuman its morality, shame, and perhaps desire for art, poetry, or something else? Answer. I am afraid that here you and I will disagree on our definitions, since according to Kabbalah human in our world belongs to the animal level. The level of human is one's aspiration in which a person wants to become like the Creator. Man in Hebrew is Adam from the word Domeh, like the Creator. That is, it is precisely the desire to reveal the Creator in order to become like Him that is called human. Can you imagine what similarity to the Creator is? I do not know who He is, where, what, why, or whether He exists at all or not. Therefore, I have no such desire. I want to exist normally, correctly, and well in this world. But the Creator? Become like Him? Only this is called the human level, since all other levels in us emanate from our animal existence, from our animal essence. From Cab TV's Close Up, January 15, 2010. Predictors and Kabbalists. Question. You said that the signs in our world simply demonstrate on a lower level what has already happened above. What does it mean? Answer. Not only what happened, but what may be. In fact, it is said, do not enchant and do not guess, because you can know the future, but it is impossible to fully predict it. After all, Nostradamus and other soothsayers did not just write their prophecies in veiled forms. They themselves do not clearly understand what they wanted to say. There are some premonitions, but nothing more. They sense what will happen at the level of our world. Very rarely, Can a person without Kabbalistic training feel the upper world? There are practically no such people. Only a few. But they also become Kabbalists, only without prior training. Just as there is a self-taught inventor who was illuminated by the brilliance of thought, he was given some idea from above, and through him this idea was revealed in the world. Some people have been working on this for decades until they come to some serious invention. We are talking about what we ourselves can reach through systematic study, application of the laws of nature, and the advice that Kabbalists who have passed this path have left for us. We are not interested in talking about what will happen somewhere in someone in some way, since we cannot control this. That is, Kabbalah calls not to live in the momentary moment, but to direct yourself to where you can truly realize your eternal part. From Kab TV's Close-Up. Destiny and the Book of Zohar, February 5, 2010. Depression is characteristic of the times. Comment: the lack of enjoyment of material life and the desire to comprehend its meaning is very similar to a state of depression. My response: no. I have experienced these states, they are not at all depressive. Maybe there is some kind of depression in them because a person cannot be enthused about what others are interested in. He looks at the world around him. What makes people laugh? What do they admire after all? The fact is that people go through depression on the way to revealing this true desire. Therefore, depression is such a common problem in the world today that even pets become infected with it from their owners. Antidepressants are also produced for pets. All layers of nature depend on each other. I am sure that in plants, if we were able to properly examine them, we would find depression. From Kab TV's Close-Up. Centaurs. Michael Leitman, on Quora: what happens to human consciousness after death? Nothing disappears in nature. Rather, everything transitions from one state to another. Consciousness thus transitions from one form to another, from one carrier to another. That is, if we consider that it even exists in us, to begin with. Consciousness is not necessarily inside us. It surrounds us. We could say that it exists in a completely different dimension, and our brain is like a modem that tunes into consciousness to the extent that it needs to realize itself at a certain moment. In other words, there is a general, collective consciousness, and there is the individual's consciousness, which we each receive from the collective consciousness. The individual consciousness that we each receive passes on from one carrier to another. It remains in reality, only changing its structure and design, similar to how our body decomposes into basic elements and re-emerges as different forms. The self that we each currently identify with is not our physical body, but it exists in consciousness. In and of itself, consciousness is information that exists beyond the parameters of time, space and motion, permeating the entirety of nature. Information thus does not disappear, but changes its medium, and we have no ability to point out exactly the form and the place of its existence. Consciousness is always collective, but our level of awareness of the collective consciousness depends on the extent to which we each participate in it. Accordingly, to the extent of our participation in the collective consciousness, we can expand our individual consciousness. In other words, by increasing our connection to others, we gain more of the picture of the collective consciousness that exists outside our individual consciousness. However, no matter how much we perceive and attain of the collective consciousness, it is always within the limits of individual consciousness. Therefore, concepts of death and the corporeal world in general are illusory and non-existent. Rather, everything is omnipresent in consciousness. Based on a Kabbalah lesson with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman on December 25, 2016. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman.